kind of gave me a renewed vigor, because I was a little bit down that I couldn't get that domain name at the very beginning. But once the domain became available and I realized that I wanted to make a more of a organic shot at a lot of this traffic, I went ahead and doubled down on it. And now we're just over 60 episodes in.
Most hosts never achieve the results they hoped for. They're falling short on listenership and monetization, meaning their message isn't being heard and their show ends up costing them money. This podcast was created to help you grow your listenership and make money while you're at it. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Adam Adams.
Hey, podcaster. This episode's going to be a little bit different because usually, you know how we do, every even or every odd number is either solo or an interview. For the next couple of episodes, probably like four of them, I'm going to actually push out interview episodes during solo episode days, only because we have so many extra interview episodes that are going all the way past the end of the year. And so I want to bring you that great content. And I'll take a break from the solos just for a few weeks and we'll jump right back in. So this interview, although it's supposed to be a solo episode, it's going to be an interview episode. So let's dive in and you can get the value that this guest has.
What's up, podcaster? Today, I am joined with Chris Miles. And I'm not sure, I've got another friend named Chris Miles who may have been on this show at one point of time. There's Miles with an I and Miles with a Y. So this is Chris Miles with a Y. Actually, been blogging for a while, long, long time ago when they had their first kid. Wife said, hey, I'm not going to go to work. So basically he goes, all right, we'll try to do some blogging and see if it pays the bills. And he was able to retire his wife, like I think 18 months later, which is pretty cool. We're not going to be talking too much about blogging today, but if you are interested in learning more about blogging and replacing a $40,000 a year income or whatever it is, then go over and hang out with Chris Miles on his podcast, Blogger Evolution. And Blogger Evolution is already in the show notes. So you can scroll down, click there, and all the links to Chris's websites and anything else that he's got, the social, we're already putting it down there. So you can scroll down and connect with him there. Since we won't really be talking about blogging, we're going to talk about podcasting. Chris has something that he wants to pour into you, and I'm going to start there. I'm going to start right there. Mr. Chris, how are you, sir?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing, Adam? Thanks for so much for having me on.
I'm doing well. So let's talk about what you said you wanted to pour into a brand new podcaster. What do you think somebody who's been podcasting less than 2 years and or they're about to launch their podcast, what do they have to know and take away from today's episode?
Yeah. So I would definitely say, I mean, podcasting is great. And the more that you put into it, the more you're going to get back out of it. But one thing that every, you know, whatever traffic source you happen to be using and you're building an audience, you need to have somewhere to send them. And one thing I like to call it is like a brochure type website or something so you can try to capture contact information so that you can continue to remarket to them in the future in some type of form or fashion. And then once you get them there, you can put them through any funnels you might set up or any products that you promote. Because actually just recently I saw on a YouTube channel, right? He is a huge, huge YouTube channel. I think they have like millions of subs. And for some reason they got hacked and the YouTube channel disappeared. But if because they had their website and they were still posting videos on their website, they didn't miss too much of a beat while they were fighting with YouTube to get their YouTube channel back up. But it's the same difference when it comes to podcasting. You want to have a central location that doesn't depend on Apple or doesn't depend on Google that you can send people to and be able to still have your audience and be in contact with them.
Wow. Yesterday, literally yesterday afternoon, I'm driving and I'm thinking about Jeeping. I'm just thinking about Jeeping. I wasn't driving my Jeep, but I wanted a Jeep. So I called my buddy and I was like, hey, what kind of radio did you put in your Jeep? And he started talking to me about it. And we actually manage his podcast also. So my team does all the stuff for his podcast. And so in passing, after talking about Jeeping and CB radios, ham radios, walkie-talkies, and being able to communicate with other Jeeps, he mentioned... He goes, and I just want to let you know that I think I've got that fixed. And I'm like, got what fixed? He goes, how my podcast was down. And embarrassingly enough, I didn't know that his podcast was down. For him, his podcast was down because his credit card expired.
Wow.
And so it couldn't pull. And I think it's Libsyn or Buzzsprout, whomever like he pays them to have his platform. They just literally took his podcast down until he paid. So they put him in the handcuffs and he didn't even have a podcast anymore. Unfortunately, didn't know that until he told me. But we were able to get it fixed after a few days. And apparently it's back up and running today. But I just spoke with him yesterday and called my team and tried to get that figured out. But with him, that's why his stopped publishing, is because his credit card expired.
Yeah.
And that's all. He didn't do anything wrong. But I've also heard of a lot of people who've maybe said a cuss word. They say shit. And they forget to put
the E on there.
Yeah, explicit. They forget to put explicit language. And so now they don't have a podcast. So you're saying that this can happen for many different reasons.
Yeah.
And regardless of what that reason is, we need to find a way, like your friend who didn't really miss that much traffic because he already had people coming to his website. Yeah. We need to figure out a way to do that.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you got to remember, if you have a YouTube channel or whatever, or even if it's on, you know, certain podcasts, the name of the website is first and then it's .com/ and then your podcast or your YouTube channel or whatever. But the thing is, so that means you don't own it, right? At the end of the day, if, you know, your credit card's messed up, if it could be something completely innocent, and if you're not on it every single day, you may not even notice it for a while. But the thing with having your own website and then being able to, you know, build authority on Google with it, especially if you include a blog, then you can really have somewhere that's yours that can't be taken away from you. And that's what you need to be able to build.
Okay. So if we're going to build this, I'm actually going to your website right now. So I'm at bloggerevolution.com. And that link is already in the show notes. A couple things that I noticed. First and foremost, I saw all of your brand colors, you know, the reds, the blacks, and then it disappeared. Right before it disappeared, it said, get our workshop for free or something like that. I can't see it right this moment, because then basically a landing page covered all that up. It's white and green instead of red and black. But what is this doing for you? I'm curious because, and after this, I want to ask, why do you have a podcast when you made all this money as a blogger? So get ready for that. But for now, I want to understand, like, if we're imitating you, if we're mimicking you, if we're copying you and doing what you're saying we need to do, we need to move everything so it's not just on the podcast, and people can go to our website. I want you to be the example of the good website. So why did it change like this and right in front of me?
Yeah, and that's a great question, because what you're looking at is a pop-up. You know, as soon as someone lands onto the site, there's a pop-up that comes up, you know, basically asking them to try to get that ethical bribe. What's in marketing, we call it a lead magnet, you know, that try to get people onto your email list so that you can continue marketing to them in the future. And the reason why that pops up is, and this is what I teach everyone as well, is I don't want you to just follow exactly what I say or do. Be honest, I want you to split test it and see if it works with your audience. So one thing that I've done on my website is I have plugins in the background that are running. It's super technical, but not that technical, but super technical. But regardless, you set it up and you do what's called an A-B test. So for example, with you just now, you got one page. Someone else who logs in may not even see that landing page. And the whole reason is just to capture an email address. They might seem annoying, but to be honest, when you split test, I tend to get more leads and email addresses with having it versus not having it. So that's just one of the things you just kind of got to throw out there. I've had other niche websites where emails don't work that great with it. And trying to do a pop-up at the first time someone sees it doesn't do as great as it might seem. There's this thing, you know, when it comes to traffic that you get to your website, a lot of people might come to your website, but you're only going to probably get a handful of email addresses. So, you know, 97%, 98% of people aren't going to input that information. So that's 97% of people who are going to be gone forever, right? So you try to your best to try to keep as many of them as possible so that you can continue to market to them, build rapport, and then hopefully help them with something in the future.
Okay. Out of curiosity, why does it go like mostly red and black themed and then the mostly white and green theme. It's almost a complete opposite. Is that part of the split testing, or what should we be thinking if we're going to be doing what you're doing? Do we try to make it go a little bit off brand so it's definitely something different, or do we keep it on and just keep it all branded? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is, to be honest. It's the colors are a little off brand just so that they stick out, right? So when you think about it, you kind of get lulled into a, okay, I know what the color scheme is here. He's black, red, and white, especially looking at the Blog Revolution site, and you get used to it. But then if something is green, like off to the side, it's going to catch your eye. And that's just the way the mind works. And you would still want to split test it as well. But what I have found is that green buttons in that particular modal that pops up tends to do better than if it was a red button. I don't know if red means stop or green means go. I'm not really sure because I have red buttons on the homepage, but people do respond to it when they go to it. Most people, when you land on, you know, any type of advertisements, it's done almost mindlessly, right? You don't really think about it too much. You don't think that, oh yeah, this is the top of a funnel and I'm about to, you know, reeled in into it. You're just like, okay, is this something that can help me? Is it something that maybe he provides that he might help me out of a jam or something like that? And if that's the case, then it can be helpful. But it's all split testing, trying to break the pattern, you know, with a person who sees it so that they're more likely to click on it and have it catch their eye.
Okay, got it. And it basically says, you know, get your passive income workshop. It teaches you how to generate $1,000 in passive income in working like less than an hour a day, right?
Yeah.
What should we be thinking? Not about the colors, not about the buttons, but about how to figure out this offer. Because the person listening most likely doesn't know how to teach somebody how to generate their first $1,000 in passive income in less than an hour a day. They've probably got some other type of offer. So how do they figure out what should be their offer?
Yeah, that's a great question, Adam, because this is something that took me a long time to figure out. And I do not claim to be an expert, by the way, because one thing I've always learned is that, you know, good landing pages aren't really just created from scratch. They're usually just honed in over time by a whole bunch of split testing based on the audience that sees that page. So usually when you're trying to craft a good offer, you want to think about what the ideal outcome would be. Like, what is it that you want people, that your audience wants? And if you can try to provide what your audience wants, but then take away a normal mental roadblock that we as humans just put in front of ourselves to protect ourselves, then it can make it a little less daunting. So you're thinking about the line that you see on there. It says, you know, how to generate your first $1,000 in passive income with less than an hour a day. Someone can look at this and think, oh yeah, I'd like to do that, but man, I don't have time to do that. Oh wait, I could do it in less than an hour a day. Okay, let me check it out a little more closely. So you kind of immediately remove a barrier just from a few words. And that's just general good copy or copywriting. And I'm going to be honest, I learned a lot of this stuff from reading $100 Million Offers by Alex Hormozi. So it's a good book I definitely recommend that shows you how to craft a good offer.
Okay. And out of curiosity, we will get to this part where it's like, is it blog or is it podcasting or why both here in a moment? Okay. I'm just thinking about crafting an offer. And I like this template. Get this good result without this hard thing. Get this good result doing it a different way than you expected. So it's generate $1,000 passive income. And that's a good thing. And working less than an hour a day. It's like, okay, cool. It's not going to take me too long. So I really like that. Your workshop, how do you end up making money if it's a freaking free workshop? They're not paying anything. So why do you have the offer? I think the listener is wondering that same question.
Yeah, and that's an excellent question because it seems counterintuitive, right? You're just like, well, what do you mean you're going to give me something for free, yet I'm supposed to make money on this on the other side of it? Well, I mean, this is called a lead magnet, or what I like to call like an ethical bribe, to try to get your attention, get your information so that I can continue to try to help you in the future if you want the help, you know, by the way. So our workshop itself is about an hour, 20 minutes, and I try to front load as much of it with as much value as possible to try to show you exactly how the process works, how it worked for me when I was able to do this, 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 and this in terms of getting the niche blogs and websites and stuff up and running. And then at the very tail end, you know, I'm not going to lie, there is a pitch at the very end for a product that I have that teaches you how to do this kind of stuff. So it's not necessarily like a sales call or a sales video the entire time. I hate those. So it's not really like that at all. It really is some good value at the very beginning. And then at the end, I'm like, hey, you know, if you want to continue, I've taught you a lot of what you need to know so far. You know, if you want to continue with this, I do have this offer that I would like to share with you. If not, you can get off the webinar. You can take everything that you watch and run with it if you'd like. But I do ask at the end, would you like to continue and then go on from there? So I find that being as transparent as possible usually goes a long way. And by doing so, some people buy, some people don't. I'll be honest, the majority of people don't buy, but a lot of them, you build trust with people that way and you can help them again in the future.
So how much is the offer? An offer, maybe not even yours, but how much should our offer be? If we had a free workshop, Adam Adams has one about how to launch a podcast, free workshop, how to launch a podcast without breaking the bank, or how to launch a podcast that gets into the top 1% so you can be found, or something like that.
Yeah.
My workshop was free, and let's pretend I just copy you and I do tons of value, jab, 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 jab. And then I end with a right hook at the end that says, if you want to continue or let us help you with this, it costs what? How do we know what that price should be?
Okay, Gary V. So what we do is, so that's a hard question, because how much should you charge is probably one of the biggest questions that you ever have if you come up with a coaching program or a course or something of that nature, because some people tend to undercharge and then you got people who like greatly overcharge. So you're like, where do you find yourself? And usually it all comes down to the perceived value of what it is that you're offering in the first place. How much of a jam are you helping somebody out of? So for example, I have a colleague of mine who teaches people how to play piano, right? And he has a course that costs like $800 to show you how to teach how to play a piano. But he has a unique twist to it. He doesn't just say, you know, do this without learning scales, or do this without, because the whole deal when you try to learn piano is like, sometimes you can do piano lessons with your Aunt Agnes for years and only learn how to play chopsticks, right? So what he does is he teaches you how to play popular music by just learning how to do chords. So he shows you how to do that kind of stuff in the very beginning of his webinar. And then at the very end, he has what's called his stack, where he shows you, I'm going to help you with this, 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 builds up the value, even assigning a dollar value to it, so that it can be a certain value, but then marking it down to what the course creator or the coach would actually really want in order to keep with it. So, I mean, I know that's a long roundabout answer, but as long as you can build the perceived value of what it is, technically money doesn't matter as long as you're going to answer or help the person out of the jam that they happen to be in. So it really just depends on that. But usually, you know, if you want to sell a course where maybe interaction is at a minimum, you know, from the course creator, then you probably would go anywhere from $0 to maybe $1,500, $2,000 at that point. I like to keep it around between $300 and $600, usually is a pretty good number. $300 and $600 is usually a pretty good number. If you want to get over that, like over $2,000, then at that point, you're probably going to want to jump on the phone, because not a lot of people are going to really come off of that kind of money without actually talking to somebody. So it depends on what you want to do, how you want your life to be in terms of selling whatever product or service you happen to be selling and promoting. And then from there, you decide, you know, what your cost is going to be or the investment for the people you'd be helping.
Okay. All right. Well, does it make money? Like, let's just say our listener is thinking about doing some funnel that you mentioned at one point today. You got to have somewhere to send them. And I think that's your website or your landing page or your squeeze page or whichever. And then you mentioned as you're creating your offer, you need to figure out what is the ideal outcome. Like, what do you want from this? And your offer was a free workshop, and the ideal outcome is that people continue on with you. If we're trying to figure out how do we make money, I know you said figure out the price by whatever you think the perceived value is. But how do we know, like, if we're going too high or too low, or wasting our time, or if we're charging too much and nobody's going to join, or if we're charging too little and everybody's going to join and then we're going to have to fulfill stuff? Is there a way to think around that?
Yeah. So there's this thing that's called cost fluidity or price fluidity, meaning that you don't necessarily have to stick with the same price that you always have. People pay different prices for the same thing just because based on the circumstance or whatever happens to be going on, what time of year it happens to be. When you go to the store, one thing can be one price. You go to the next week, it could be a completely different price. So one thing that I always recommend people do is when you are first getting started, you know, throw a price out there that you feel okay with, that you feel your time is worth and how much you're going to be putting into it. You don't want to feel as though at the other side of it, man, I wish I don't feel like doing it, or I don't feel like helping this person anymore. And if you look back at it and think, well, it's because you feel like you might be wasting your time, then that might be a reason why you might need to increase prices at that point. But it really just depends on putting a price out there and then throwing some traffic at it. See how the audience reacts. If the market reacts the way that you would like them to, then just keep going with there and don't touch it. But you still want to, at some point, maybe test it by lowering the price. See if everything increases. Then you might want to increase the price. See if everything increases. And then you have the old wise saying that people who pay attention, you know, so sometimes you think, if someone doesn't usually value something that's free, I mean, I typically do, but a lot of people, some people may not. So if someone spent $100 on something, and then the fact that they are either going to be successful with it or not might depend on how much skin they have in the game versus somebody who might have put down $1,000 or $2,000. They're more apt to want to work to get that investment back. If you're working on a make money type offer, by the way, if you're doing like teaching piano, like we were talking about before, that would be a little different. You probably wouldn't have a product that would be that price unless you were just trying to completely market to a certain demographic of people.
Yeah. I was once trying to learn something. I don't even remember what it was. It might have been in real estate or business or advertising. I don't recall. All I remember is this sad thing that an ad came up and it seemed like it was, you know, $15,000 worth of value for $19.99. So I said, no brainer, going to buy that. Bought it for $19.99. I have not once ever logged into that. And I think it's because I didn't value it. Yes, you said people who pay attention. Yes, I did pay, but it didn't hurt. That amount of money didn't hurt me, $20. It was like, I could do this anytime. This is great. I may as well have it. And I did actually want to learn it, but I've never, ever, ever, ever tried logging in. And it's only been a couple of years. I literally can't even remember what the course was because I didn't pay enough to care. Right.
Right. Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting that you said people who pay attention. One of the things that we do that I have learned over time, my stepdad made me read Rich Dad Poor Dad. He made me invest in real estate. I started doing that. I learned that I needed to own a business that had employees, so I wasn't self-employed. And my stepdad is right about everything. He's right about every dang thing. He's conservative. He knows what he's talking about. And he used to tell me that my prices, when I had my first handyman company while in college and I had 13 employees, he used to ask me how much I'm charging. And I'd be like, oh, we're charging $15 an hour. And then he's like, how much do you pay your guys? And I said, $12 an hour. So when I've got 13 guys and I'm making $3 an hour per guy, and I was so excited, I told my dad, I'm making $3 an hour per guy. That's 13 people working 40 hours a week. So this is $40 an hour that I'm making, and I'm not doing anything, Dad. I'm smart. And he's like, you have to raise your prices. Why do I have to raise my prices? And this went on and on and on. And I've had more than one business throughout this time over the last, we'll call it 20 years, 15 years. And I have learned that for me, things cost so much more than I ever expected. For example, my podcast agency, we do editing and post-production for other people's podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got this service that I remember thinking, okay, my team, I pay them, let's say $5-6 an hour. And they only work on the podcast for like 8 hours. And so that is $40, something like mm-hmm. this. Okay. And so then I'm like, I'll just charge $100. I'll just charge $100. Now my dad's going to be proud of me because I'm making more than double.
Yeah.
And then what I find out is that $100 is way too low. Even though it sounds like we're making money, it's harder than we think because I've got to onboard clients. I've got advertising. I've got overhead for my office. I've got to buy a microphone, upgrade a microphone every now and again. Maybe one day I'll be cool like you and get the SM7B. Right. So it is mind-boggling how we've got to charge in many cases like triple or quadruple what we think we need to charge. Do you have any thoughts, insights, history, experience to back me up or argue with me on that?
Yeah, 100%, because it's all about our margins. You know, how much are we taking on the other end of it once you get the actual service or product delivered? So I remember I used to moonlight as a DJ, right? So I was a wedding DJ. I would go around and do weddings, anniversaries, you know, the occasional, the party here or whatever. And I used to just charge kind of just enough, but I was just, you know, have my stuff in my garage, pack it into the truck and then go to the party. And it's a lot of work, right? You have to probably sit with the people, especially if it's a wedding, you got to sit with them. Then you got to be the first one at the party because you got to set up. You're the last one to leave because you got to play the music to the end and then tear down. And what if I blow a speaker or something, you know, while I'm there and I'm only charging like bare minimum just for my time? At that point, I'd be losing money and there will be no point in me to do it. Now, when I go do a party, I'm sitting there barely into it because I know that I'm losing hundreds of dollars just from doing the party. So it messes with your psyche and messes with everything if you don't charge exactly not just what you're worth, but just enough when you look at the cold, hard numbers and realize that how much do I need to earn for this to at least make it worth my time? Because at the end of the day, our time is the only asset that we really cannot get back. You spend a few dollars here, you spend a few dollars there. Every 2 weeks, you might get paid, you know, with a traditional 9-to-5. But if you blow your money 1 week, 2 weeks later, you're going to get another paycheck. When it comes to time, once your time is gone, there's no going back 2 weeks to get that time back. So understanding the true value of your time will help and the value of your time for other people. Just another quick one. I have someone who will edit a YouTube video for me. And technically, I could pay them $100 an hour to do it, and it would still be worth my time to do it because of how much time or how much my time is actually worth. So you do want to come up with a good number that will make everybody happy, you know, in terms of getting the process taken care of and done. Plus, you want to get someone who's going to do good work, make them feel good about doing it. And especially when you get to hiring people, that's one thing you got to keep in mind as well. But yeah, you don't want to undervalue someone just by how much you're paying them.
Okay. All right. I've been wanting to ask this question, Chris.
Shoot.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, I want to find out why do you have a podcast if you made so much damn money blogging. We'll be right back.
Hey, my friend. As you know, this episode is sponsored by my company, growyourshow.com. We want you to be able to have the best tools at your disposal without costing you a whole arm and a leg. So right now you can get a free list of vetted equipment that like mics, mixers, webcams, sound treatment, editing software, everything that you need. I created the whole PDF with direct purchase links just to save you time and money to help it be more convenient for you. So this free PDF will help you skip all the guesswork. If it's on there, it's vetted and approved by yours truly. And if it's not on there, it's probably not worth the money. So go ahead and get yours at growyourshow.com/PDF. Let's get back into the show.
And we're back with Mr. Chris Miles, who is a blogger, retired his wife in like 18 months, I think, making $40,000 blogging. But then he went and started a podcast. So I'm confused if you're supposed to be a blogger, if you're supposed to be a podcaster, if did the podcast grow the blog company? I'm not sure. So let's figure this out with Chris Miles. Chris, why'd you start a podcast?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. It's a question that I get asked quite often, to be honest. That's really the good question, right? It's like, what you're doing is so amazing. Why are you doing this? You know, and it's an excellent question. But to be honest, when it comes to what I do, I'm typically a niche blogger, which means I find topics to create websites about, and then I create as much content around that topic as possible. And then I monetize it with with display ads and affiliate marketing. And that business model works great. There's a lot of people who do it and you don't even know what they look like, because you don't need to know what they look like. The best part about blogging is that you don't need to have your face everywhere. You don't have to be this great speaker, you know, in order to maybe do a podcast or talk in front of people or whatever. But one thing that I did in college, one of my majors, I guess you could say, is communications. I've always been pretty good at just speaking and talking to people and teaching things. And people tell me that I break down things very well, to the point to where almost anybody can understand it. In fact, in one of my trainings, I mentioned that I can teach a baby. I feel like I can teach a baby how to do, you know, certain things in terms of blogging. So because I do tend to express myself well and try to explain things in a nice, simple fashion, I went ahead and gave it a try. After about, I think I started blogging in around 2015, and then maybe around 2018 is when I started a brand, to where I just started showing other people how to do the niche blogging as well and seeing if they can would like to do it. At the very beginning, it was just me kind of just helping a few people, and then a few more people asked to help, a few more other people asked to help, then I started creating videos on it. Then after creating videos on it, that started to grow a following on YouTube as well. And then eventually, instead of promoting someone's stuff all the time, I decided to start promoting my own stuff, because as great as affiliate marketing is, the one drawback of it is that if they change something on their side, you're going to have to just live with it because you're promoting it. So I got tired of promoting something, then they change, and then now I didn't feel great about promoting them anymore. So I went ahead and started creating my own stuff on how to do this stuff as well. So just for full disclosure, I make more money with the niche blogging than I do with the actual coaching, because I try to create things in a way to where I don't have to do as much with the coaching. And then I started doing the podcast with it as well, to try to create another revenue or a stream of leads into it as well, just to get with that. And to be honest, I think I like podcasting more than I have been YouTube, you know, recently. So I'm now up to around 60 episodes of Blogger Revolution, and I'm just building that brand on top of building the other business technically with the niche websites. So hopefully that makes sense.
So here's what I'm hearing. You're a true natural born entrepreneur.
Yes, I'm a serial entrepreneur.
Always want to see what's up. You always want to expand yourself. You always want to try something new, see how it works. You're willing to try it, dabble, figure it out, prove a concept. And also, you see a lot of value and benefit in multiple streams of income. So for you, you've got the stream of income through blogging and selling those ads. You've got another stream of income with your coaching and your courses. And then you've got another stream of income from some of your content as well. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
Yeah. You know, they always say you want to have as many streams of income as possible, especially when you're an entrepreneur. I've been, like I said, a serial entrepreneur, as I'm sure you probably are. Even when I was like 5 years old, not even five, maybe more like eight or so, I remember like getting candy from school and then going door to door. I think the candy only cost like $2 or $3, but I'd sell it for like $6 and be able to try to keep the extra money. And the school didn't tell me to do that. And people look at the kid and be like, oh, that's a cute face. Here you go. You know, they wouldn't really fight with it too much. But I've always been the type that had something going in the background. And I didn't take a lot of it seriously, to be honest. A lot of it didn't do well enough to justify continuing to do it, until I found out that we were pregnant with our first son and I needed to change a few things and I had to make something happen. I had no choice. Back was against the wall. My wife wanted to quit a job. It was a whole bunch of stuff. So once I finally had a real reason to continue moving forward, that's when I stumbled across affiliate marketing and blogging, and things were starting to take off from there as well. And once you became the entrepreneur, once you became the true one that, you know, had a business that actually was working and running pretty well, then you start to become more aware of the holes in your bucket, right? You know, when you're working a traditional 9-to-5, if you break your leg, then you won't be able to work. And that might be your only stream of income. But when you're an entrepreneur, you're almost ultra aware of it, because you know, if it doesn't work, you might have to go back to work. So I always try to build up one traffic stream of traffic over here. And if this one were to fade or go down or whatever, hopefully I have another one that's rising that I can double down on until I can figure out what's wrong with the other one. You know, so yeah, having the multiple streams of income and multiple streams of traffic coming in helps to insulate my business.
Yep. Good stuff. I'm glad you went through that. Here's what I want to know. Did you fail at anything with your podcast? Like, did you just do something crappy and learn your lesson? You can share that with our listener. Or did you just do something totally amazing and it really worked and you need to share it with the listener?
Yeah, no, I definitely have more failures than wins over here. But the beautiful part about what we do, Adam, is, you know, you only really need to win once and then things will start really figuring it out. But no, I had a few major blunders. And one in terms of the podcast specifically, you know, is when I first started it, I didn't have a course or really anything to follow. There was this guy who talked about podcasting and I followed him and kind of just listened to his free stuff and went from there. So I started up the podcast. I got like maybe 20 episodes in, I gave up on it. You know, it was all solo shows. Well, actually, there was a couple of interviews, but it was mostly solo shows. And I just was working on this, I was working on that. Everything was just kind of reaching ahead. And I realized, okay, something's got to fall while I concentrate on this. So while I was concentrating on learning Instagram ads and all of that fun stuff, the podcast ended up kind of falling from the wayside. So about maybe 9 months to a year passed by. And after I had figured out, you know, a lot of the paid advertising side of things and constantly coming up with new videos and new ads and throwing it out there, my ad account got shut down over at Facebook. And it scared me because the thing about paid advertising is the second you stop paying for it, the traffic stops, right? So I needed to figure out, okay, maybe I should concentrate more on organic. Now, I made a decent amount of money with it, don't get me wrong, with learning the ad side of things, but I thought to myself, I need to figure out more organic strategies. So I went back and resurrected the podcast. Another big reason why is because the domain name that I wanted at the very beginning wasn't available. And then all of a sudden it was available. So then when it popped up, it was perfect. Blogger Evolution was available for purchase. I went ahead and got it. And then that kind of gave me a renewed vigor because I was a little bit down that I couldn't get that domain name at the very beginning. So maybe that was part of the reason too why I gave up on it, because it wasn't ideal for me at the time. But once the domain became available and I realized that I wanted to make a more of a organic shot at a lot of this traffic, I went ahead and doubled down on it. And now we're just about 60 episodes in.
So cool. So cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
So 9 to 12 months, you got your website, you decided to jump in, and it's mainly the organic side. And it was because your Facebook ad manager got shut down. Interestingly enough, my Facebook ad manager, I had somebody like come in and hack the Facebook manager, and they spent ads on just random stuff, like ads about something I would never need, a bustier. Like,
oh, wow.
I know you think I wear a bustier. You're looking at me and you're like, oh, that guy, you know, you don't look like that without one. But I don't wear one at all. And we were making ads about it, apparently, not we, but from my account. And they were able to hack 3 of my credit cards. All of those credit cards were on this Facebook thing. And I was in Napa on vacation. And
oh, wow.
When I got back, it was like the main thing that I had to do was try to figure out how to get this ad manager up and running, because we were trying to run ads for like many different clients that do marketing with us. We do the editing and post-production, but we also do like paid ads for people to kind of grow their audience. But that's what we were needing. That's what we were doing. And it has been an absolute nightmare. I got home from Napa like almost 2 months ago now. I still have a crazy amount of wine, so don't worry, I'm very stocked up like a liquor store. But at the same time, it was a little hard to figure out that ad manager stuff. So you've learned multiple streams of income, multiple streams of revenue, multiple directions, multiple ways. And one big takeaway, I think, for the listener is the organic side and the paid side. And it might be good to have both and be able to try to control both, because you never know when one of them comes off. We started today's episode with a thought of YouTube could be taken down for any reason.
Yeah.
A podcast might possibly get taken down for cussing or for having your credit card lapse. You just forgot to update it. And now all of a sudden you don't have a podcast and you're freaking out. And so it's good to figure out how do we do multiple different things. And another big takeaway that I've gotten from you today is on one of those things that we need to do is having a way for the traffic that comes from our podcast to go straight to our website or landing page so that we can have a free offer. And I don't remember what you called it. I'm going to call it a lead magnet. What'd you say? Ethical bribe?
Yeah, ethical bribe. Just to okay. Try to get it. But lead magnet, it doesn't always have to be free too. You can do a low ticket offer in the front or something like that. There's a few options that you can go with.
Yeah. And that helps you so that you are in contact with your people.
Exactly.
Like your guy who had a YouTube channel, lost the YouTube, but it was not terrible because he had people already knew that they could go to his website. And so he still got that traffic.
Yeah. Your true friends are going to look for you when they're trying to get you.
Appreciate you. Thank you for coming on. It's Blogger Evolution. I was going to say revolution, but there's not two R's. Blogger Evolution. And that's bloggerevolution.com. His website's in the show notes. His bio is in the show notes. Probably his lead magnet for you is in the show notes. And you might want to just get the lead magnet anyway, so that you can copy this guy, so that you can see what he's doing, how he's doing it. Obviously, he's been doing it for a minute. He's done a lot of research at it. And so you might just go ahead and throw your email in just so you can see what he's doing. You never know. So all of that information is in the show notes. Chris, there is one thing that might be on your mind now, or it's about to get in your mind. What do you want to leave a new podcaster with today? Something we haven't talked about.
Yeah. So one of my favorite phrases is do something now that your future self will thank you for. And another one is I tend to fear regret more than I fear failure. So when I go into the future and future me looks back and say, man, I'm glad I at least tried, even if it didn't work, you know, I'm glad I at least tried. I would rather that than nothing. Because a big reason for this was, you know, so my wife and my son can be around me. And I didn't want to be the guy who was, I was just here to be gone 12, 15 hours a day, come back and like, oh, who's this guy? You know, I didn't want that. So I fought hard for it. And I figured when my son was like maybe one or two at the time, I said, let's go ahead and give it a try. Let's quit. Worst case scenario is if I can stick around until he at least goes to school, then could have at least been there for his most formative years. And that's now been almost 4 years, you know, and we're still going strong.
Awesome stuff. We will let you go from this episode, but I don't want you to go anywhere. You need that info. Don't go anywhere. I'll see you there. This is serious. Don't go. Now that you've gotten whatever value that you feel that you got, the actionable takeaways, you need to implement the stuff that you learn. If you remember me talking about bird church once, and they learn how to fly, and then they walk home, I don't want you to walk home. I want you to fly home. So take the steps, take the actionable steps for your benefit so that you can become a better podcaster. That's the only thing that I ask of you. And I'll see you for more actionable tips on the very next episode.